Welcome, and it's a pleasure to see everyone this evening. I'm Jill Smith, president of the Stanford League of Women Voters. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan political organization working to promote good government and impact policies through education and advocacy. And I would be remiss if I did not take this opportunity to invite all of you to become members of the Stanford League of Women Voters, which is open to both men and women. Throughout the year, our efforts include hosting debates, registering voters, studying local and state issues, and observing boards and commissions, all in an effort to encourage good government and to ensure voters have the information and opportunity to participate in our democratic process. I'd like to thank our candidates for joining us this evening, the Ferguson Library for hosting our event, also Christine Hall, Managing Editor of The Advocate, and our moderator, Kay Maxwell. Ms. Maxwell has served as the 16th President of the League of Women Voters of the United States and currently is Executive Director of the World Affairs Forum.
Thank you very much, and good evening, and welcome everyone to this debate among Republican Michael Fedeli, Democrat David Martin, unaffiliated candidate Kathleen Murphy, and unaffiliated candidate John Zito, all candidates for the office of mayor of the city of Stanford. Our purpose this evening is to provide you with an opportunity to hear their views on the issues facing the city of Stanford. As Jill mentioned, the mission of the League is to encourage the active and informed participation of citizens in their government, and obviously the most basic participation is voting. And we hope that this debate will help Stanford voters make an informed choice on November 5th. You should be aware that WSHU Public Radio is recording the debate tonight, and it will be posted on their website, wshu.org, and it will also be rebroadcast at a later point on WSHU. You can find out when by going to their website. So tell your friends, in case you have friends and colleagues who were not able to join us this evening in person. I also want to request that there be no applause during the event. It's obviously distracting to the candidates, and it takes away from the time they have to respond to the questions concerning the issues we all care about. In other words, we would appreciate it if you would make your feelings known about the candidates in the voting booth on November 5th, rather than by applause this evening. So your cooperation is sincerely appreciated, and obviously at the conclusion of the debate, I encourage you to applaud as loudly as you wish. And may I also ask at this point in time, I'm sure everyone in the room has a cell phone or some other device that will make some noise, so if you could just double check and be sure that they are all turned off, we would all appreciate it. The format that we're using for tonight's debate is designed to allow the candidates time to discuss the issues. The only rule is that the total time used by each candidate by the conclusion of the debate be approximately the same. As was mentioned, Christine Hall of The Advocate and I will be alternating posing the questions which have come from the League, you in the audience, and The Advocate, but the candidates will not be restricted to 1 or 2 minute responses. Instead, they can spend as little or as much time as they feel is appropriate to discuss each issue. Our goal is to encourage some debate. If you want to submit a question for consideration, please do write it out on the index card that was given to you as you came in and hand it to one of the ushers. But please keep your questions brief and focused on a specific issue. And also, please understand that while we will ask as many questions as time permits, it simply will not be possible to ask them all. Now, the candidates will take turns being the first to respond to a question. And following the question period, each candidate will make a 2-minute closing statement. Members of the League of Women Voters are serving as timers for the debate, and they'll keep the candidates and me informed of the time expended. If a serious imbalance in time occurs during the course of the debate, I'll call it to the candidate's attention and we'll see that it's corrected. So it's now my pleasure to introduce the candidates. To my far right, your left, is David Martin. To his left is John Zito. To his left is Kathleen Murphy. And to her left, Michael Fedeli. The position of the candidates on the stage, the order of responding to questions, and the order of their 2-minute closing statements were decided earlier. So So let's get to the debate. And the first candidate to respond to a question will be David Martin. And the question is, since Stamford's charter provides that the mayor initiates the budget, what would your specific budget priorities be as mayor?
My budget priorities are to make certain that we can improve services and at the same time keep taxes down. And I think that would probably be the priorities of every mayor. The Board of Education submits a separate budget, and basically I want to look at the combined budget to make certain that we protect and serve and advance our interests in education. But at the same time, I believe that we need to do more work in City Hall to make it more user-friendly, to make it more accountable, and to make it more transparent. And I believe these do not require large sums of money, but basically these are areas that I'm going to work on. I am going to be using more technology to improve our services in a cost-effective way. So you're probably going to see me adding resources for information technology, and I'm also going to be working on transportation. So as I've said in a few debates, I'm going to add a transportation planner. But together, we have to keep everything in balance. And so that's what I'm going to do. And my hope is that over time, not my hope, my commitment over time is to have a steady increase in services while at the same time keeping that rate of taxes that we put on the homeowners at less than the rate of inflation or, for that matter, less than the rate of the Social Security Index. Thank you.
Mr. Zito?
I think David's been reading my notes. Well, it's somewhat the same, but we got to definitely keep an eye on the Board of Ed, what they're spending, our highway department for purchasing equipment, fire department, police department, all the departments. As of there, I will keep a tight budget on our spending. Find out what we're spending money on and put a crunch on it. Shop around. We can buy things online for a little bit cheaper and try to keep our taxes down. If the town spends less money, that means the taxes can come down. Freeze taxes for the seniors. Thank you.
Ms. Murphy?
Thank you very much. My first priority would be to focus really on the capital budget. We've got significant issues with respect to our infrastructure and our schools. We also have a significant problem. We have issued bond issue after bond issue, and now we end up with $500 million of debt. We also, at the end of this, you'd have to look around the city and say, what do we have for that? All that $500 million plus the millions that we've already paid back. And we have schools that are in disrepair, roads that are in disrepair, the sewer system. So we need to really focus on and prioritize where we spend our capital dollars. We have put in place this past, actually my first term on this, the Board of Finance, where now that we're doing project specific. So now we are prioritizing, and anyone will know what our priorities and what projects that we intend to accomplish. On the operating side of the budget, again, we have some very large items. We have payroll itself is $30 million a month. But the health and retirement benefits, really we have to look at. They have to be negotiated, but we really need to start educating the unions and the all of the employees in terms of what medical costs are costing us and how much and how they can participate in helping a better balance and sharing those costs. And I think programs like health savings plan actually are quite saleable to the population in the municipal world, and that hasn't even been tried here in Stamford, and it has been in other municipal areas. Obviously, the school budget is very significant, and the I just think where the dollars are being spent in the school budget is a needs to be looked at. We need to spend the dollars where the as I say, the product and the service meets the customer. That's the student and, of course, the parents. And we need to do a much better job of pushing those dollars down into the school and into the teachers. We've got a big chore of introducing and rolling out the Common Core. And we need to, but again, there are other areas in the school, in the Board of Ed budget that we really need to look at. And then we would look at what services we could share between the city and the Board of Ed. There are areas that we've got some duplication. But we've got to look at where we can find some cost savings to really maintain taxes. Thank you.
Mr. Fidelli?
The important role, one of the important roles of mayor is presenting a budget, and obviously presenting a budget that provides the services that are required by the citizens of our city, and to do that in a cost-effective, efficient way while maintaining service and expectations. In our administration, we would look at the budget line by line and ask the question, do we need it? If we need it, can we do it better? And if we can do it better, what's it going to cost and how will we do it? And we would look at efficiencies and things of that nature. One of the things that I would look to bringing back is an internal audit group, a group that would be able to audit our departments, our efficiencies, a compliance officer, so that some of the challenges that we've had with respect to transparencies, some of the thefts that have occurred in city government would be hopefully caught at that level and also be utilized by this group to look at the efficiencies on the operational side. On the capital budget, one of the first things I would like to do is an asset inventory to look at all our assets in the city, when we purchase them, what we purchase them for, what's the useful life. And that's not only equipment, heavy equipment like fire engines and police cars and things of that nature, but also computer equipment, a field that I know a little bit about, roads and sidewalks, and take a look at what that scheduling is. If there's a problem with the road, is that road more important than another road? I think for too long we've been done in somewhat of a haphazard way. We've gone to allowed the planning board and individuals going to the planning board to kind of come with their wish list instead of being able to say, okay, here's, I'll just pick the fire department. Here's our asset list, and we have X number of fire engines, and we know that these fire engines have a useful life and that we need to start replacing these pieces of equipment. So I think that's very important. With respect to the school budget, I would like to be an active participant in that. I know that sounds kind of strange, but the mayor does have an ex officio position on that school budget to lend input. I would ask to be part of going through the Board of Education budget along with the Board of Education Fiscal Committee and the superintendent to hopefully look at efficiencies, to look at situations where we can take advantage of things that either we're doing on the city side that we may be able to consolidate with the Board of Education and eliminate redundancy, or things on the Board of Education side that we can move over there and eliminate redundancy. I think for too long they've kind of worked in somewhat parallel paths, and I think it's time to start looking at those consolidations and the efficiency so that all of us are spending your dollars wisely. Thank you.
Anybody have anything else to add to that question? No? All right. Then.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just thinking about that. There is more to this than the question says in its opening statement here. We really have to change the way we do things. And it's not just a matter of priorities. It's a matter of how you think about the budget and you think about efficiencies and everything else. Because we've been saying for years we're going to look at efficiencies. What I've seen is that our budget office has turned into nothing more than a bureaucratic paper-pushing group. And in 2 years, I've only seen one or two city officials, when they present their budget, even talk about the savings that they get from an investment. And whether that's a capital investment or an operating investment, it just isn't discussed. I've got to change the way the budget office thinks. I've got to make them start thinking about what's the return that we get from the decisions that we make. It has to become part of the way the city thinks. There's more to this than that. It's about we've got to stop always cutting. That's not working. It hasn't worked for 50 or 60 years. The taxes keep going up. I think what we start saying, how do the department heads, when they can find a savings, how can they redirect that to do more? And how is it that we can avoid increasing our expenses over time rather than every time we find a cut, we cut it? Guess what? Nobody's trying to cut the budget because they just get punished for it. And finally, I'm going to redirect the capital budget. There are things that we need and things that have to be done, absolutely. But if we can find projects that pay for themselves, I'm going to move those up front. If I can get a 5-year payback on a capital project, I'm going to start bonding that up front because that's how we save money over the long run. Rather than allocating things equally, we're going to make the return that we invest a greater part of the equation. And it's not happening now, and it's got to start at the mayor's office, and that's one of the things I'm going to do.
Go ahead.
Again, I'd just like to add that I think planning plays a very important role in how we spend our money and what we're spending it on. And I think there's a big area of improvement. I think historically we've been reactive instead of proactive. You know, I talked about the planning board, and when the departments come before the planning board with their wish list of things that they want. And, you know, I've talked to some departments, I won't name them, and they may need maybe $1 million or $1.5 million in capital dollar requirements, but they come in with $3 million. Why? Because they're afraid they're going to get cut and they're not going to get what they need. My point is, if you plan it and you're realistic, maybe the total dollars that we're working with are more realistic so that you're going to get what ends up happening. So in the example I used, they need $1.5 million. They ask for $3 million. Guess what they get? They get $1 million. So they're short $500. Whereas if they had a plan or an asset list and say, here's what we really need, and every department did that from a planning perspective, when they go to the planning board, we're actually talking about the real dollars that are needed to move this project forward. So I think planning becomes a very important part and something that would be very key in a Fidelity administration.
Anything else? Yes, go ahead.
Good, Kevin.
Thank you, John. I would like to just talk a little on the capital budget as well, because what's happening, the departments go through, as the gentleman have already said, we know that they'll go through and come up with their so-called wish list. And I would say the last 2 years, when I've asked the whether it's the IT department or the fire department, you know, they're asking for more money for something like just general IT equipment, for instance, or fire equipment. And I said, I don't understand. We're doing projects. So the last 3 years, we were doing project-specific bonding. So we issued bonds, and I'm telling them they have, you have $1.5 million in cash. Why haven't you spent it? Why haven't you executed on those plans? And now you're asking for more money. So the answer, at least three different times, was they were never told they had the money. They didn't know they had the money. So the communication and the breakdown, we're not getting execution, but I think the money actually is being just used for other priorities, and we're not following our bonds, our project-specific bonding, and that's got to be stopped. Thank you.
Mr. Thiel?
Well, let the public know. WPCA has done wonders down there. I went through the plant. We're taking our solid waste, and we were trucking it before, costing us a lot of money. They have a new facility down there that's taking the solid waste and drying it out, making small pellets, and selling it to farmers or outside contractors or giving it to farmers. In a couple of years, as of mayor, hopefully this year coming, I'm going to be looking into it and see how the city of Stamford can make money off that. We have to pay for the equipment. That's what they're doing. There are no negotiation with contracts. The Board of Education, beginning of the year, when I was going to the meetings, they were looking for $25 million. Well, they didn't know that some of the jobs were done. They didn't cash the bonds in. They only needed $18 million. As of mayor, I'll be tightening the budget. I'll be watching everything that goes on. The people that I bring in on my cabinet will be looking at everything. POs, where the money's being spent. There's a lot of things being missing out here. I'm looking into trying to find out why the workman's comp is so high. Hire a private investigation firm at a good price to find out where our money, if our money's being stolen or misplaced or equipment being taken. It's not fair. Thank you.
All right, ready to move on to the next question? All right, Christine?
The cabinet that you assemble will be critical to your success as a mayor. Can you talk about what your vision would be for your cabinet members, where you'd recruit them from, what skills and qualities you would be looking for in those people?
And Mr. Zito, you're the first to respond to this question.
Can you repeat the question again, please?
Sure.
I'm sorry.
Sure.
Yes, don't hesitate to ask for repeat.
I'm asking who you would look to hire to bring onto your cabinet and where you would find those type of people, what kind of qualities you would look for in your cabinet members.
The cabinet members that I look for, and I have different races, Latinos, Asian, Blacks, Jamaicans. I've been looking for them, talking to different people, and getting to meet certain people in different fields, going to job fairs, listen to other people talk, different lawyer friends I have, just feeling people out, what they run for, different towns, if they work for different towns, different corporates, their pay scales, and where their head is thinking. They want to help the Stanford people. And guess what? I found them in Stanford. Like I said before, leave the work in Stanford. We have qualified people here. And that's what I want to do as mayor. Something goes wrong, Stanford people. Thank you.
Ms. Murphy?
Yes, I agree that it's really important what this, what my cabinet would look like and the composition of the cabinet. Certainly, I would be looking for the most qualified people I could find. I would not be looking to make appointments for people who helped me get elected or were contributors or party loyalists. I'm definitely an independent. And I think we have had problems, obviously, over the last several years because of just hiring people who are, as they say, party loyalists. Certainly the director of administration would be a key role. We've got, I believe, very significant fiscal issues. I think I can identify, some very talented people in terms of what kind of skills we need. Whether you're talking that job has the has people responsible for from the controller's office through the tax office, and purchasing and OPM. That job is a critical job in terms of not only filling that position, but making sure each of those functional areas have the right people in those departments, and they all have to be team players. Right now, we've got an awful lot of silos at 888 Washington Boulevard, and we've got to bring those people all and understand that we've got one goal in terms of serving the public and in terms of really managing the taxpayers' dollars. I think in the legal department, we've found if we're just hiring, I don't mean to disparage single practitioner lawyers, but we need people who understand and how to manage a legal department and how to manage legal cases. Some of these cases that we pursue and spend a lot of money on, we're spending money on, I think it's more of a personal vendetta as opposed to being smart in terms of how things can be handled and, really manage that legal bill. Our legal bills are actually very... made way too high. That's considered those basically a waste of dollars. I think the legal department, has HR responsible reports through it, which I think is part of the, per the charter, but I don't believe in that. You know, the people, the majority of our costs, we're delivering service with people, and we really should have, that position should be at a higher level, a direct report to the mayor's office. And the personnel issues really have to be dealt with professionally. And our union contracts, I think we should be actually looking at outsourcing more of the negotiations of those union contracts with people who are actually looking at what other cities and municipals are doing in Connecticut in terms of getting work rules changed and getting more efficient. So those are really key areas. And I think underneath the... And I would expect that director of administration to really bring in and get... So our purchasing department upgraded in terms of being more professional and understanding the supply chains and we've got to go under the purchasing rules and ordinance, but we really have to identify and build a better supply chain. I think that would be key positions. Thank you.
Mr. Fidelli?
Thank you. I've had experience in government and hiring staff. As a lieutenant governor, when you take office, you show up and there's nobody there. You have to pick them all new. And I believe that I've had a lot of experience in doing that and picking a staff that worked very well, not only with my office, but with the governor's office, with the legislative offices, both Republican and Democrat. And we got things done. We got things done because what I've looked at always is not only the experience that the individuals bring to the table, and the diversity of the group that we bring to the table, but also that they're team players, that they work together, they play nice, that it's not about I, but it's about team, and that we all work well in that environment. I think that's important, so that if they see something in another area that may not be working right, instead of saying, well, that's not my area of responsibility, they're going to say, you know, we've got a challenge there. Let's pick it up and let's do that. And actually, we did that at the lieutenant governor's office with less staff than the prior lieutenant governor and still got more done. And I think anyone that ever interfaced with my office there can tell you the quality of the team that we had put in place. In business, I've done that also. I've built an organization that I started over 30 years ago, and I did that and brought people on board. I've got people in a high-tech field that have been with me for 20-plus years, and anyone that's worked in IT knows that they just don't stay that long. They stay that long because they are part of a team. They appreciate the work that's being done, and I make them feel like they're part of a team. No one works for me. We work together as a team. So a team is very important in a Fidelity administration, a Fidelity cabinet. Diversity is very important. Legal, our charter says that the law department or the corporation council is a part-time position. Well, ironically, the lieutenant governor's position in the state charter is a part-time position, but for those of you who knew me, when I was there, I worked 60 to 70 hours a week. I didn't make it a part-time position. And my legal corporation counsel person is going to be a full-time person working with the mayor. Why? Not because the charter says anything different, but because we need someone in that department who's going to be focused on doing the things that we've talked about in the city, the problems that we've had, the challenges that we have. It can't be done in a part-time basis, and I think it's time we recognize that. Many years ago, when this was a small town, maybe that worked. It doesn't work today. I mentioned to you about an auditor. I think an auditor and a compliance officer, something we definitely need in this city, reports in a cabinet position. Maybe he's not a cabinet officer, but clearly that individual would be part of the cabinet team, looking at efficiencies, looking at operational audits and things of that nature. So I look forward to putting together as great a team going forward after November 5th as I've had in my other prior political experience and also in my business experience. Thank you.
Mr. Martin?
Well, of course, they've got to be capable. They've got to be qualified. I want them to be leaders of the people that work for them. I want them to be managers of the people that work for them. And we've been saying team player, yes, of course, but in actuality, there's two types of that team player. One is that they've got to work honestly and with the elected boards. They've got to earn the respect of the elected boards, which means that when they say something, that the boards have to feel that it's honest and that they stand behind it in good faith. They also have to work with their staff and the people that work for them, and they've got to work with the entire cabinet. And of course, as John pointed out, there needs to be some diversity in the cabinet. We are one of the most diverse cities in the country, and I think that has to be represented well. I'm not really interested in party label. I am more, but at the same time, they're going to have to be able to support the vision and strategy. But there's one other thing. I need a cabinet that is strong enough that they can challenge my ideas, and they can inform me how to make better decisions. This is not a situation where I'm the boss and they have to follow. I'm going to have a lot of ideas, aggressive ideas. I want them to be able to push back and work with us together to find the best solutions possible. But finally, and just as importantly, they've got to be able to get things done. You've got to be able to get things done. I think that's a good list.
Okay. You ready for the next question?
May I just add?
Go ahead.
I would be remiss if I didn't talk about public safety, which is another core service that we must deliver. So I think I would make sure that we had a very good public safety director and the DPW and operations. Has huge responsibility, and we would make sure that organization, I would make sure that that organization, again, understands the goals and that we are communicating and we're working towards what's best for the city and for the residents. Thank you.
I should add one to my list. It's actually extremely important. I need a cabinet where every single one of them has a high standard of integrity, a high standard of ethics, and they project that to everyone else that works with them and works for them, that they understand responsibility and they understand accountability. And to me, that's sort of something that just has to be done, and therefore we shouldn't have to worry about it after that. Thank you.
Did you have something? Go ahead.
Yes, one thing. I think this town, our city hall, has too many chiefs, not enough Indians. As an independent since high school, I'm unaffiliated. Oh, well, I'm the man to do it. I got the shoulders to back it up. Thank you.